Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Chof Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Chof Gimel. You'll notice a two dots in the middle of the line, followed by Omar Rav Sheshes. We now start the Gemara. Omar Rav Sheshes, Achsanoi Chayav Bener Chanukah. An Achsanoi is a visitor to a community. He is hosted by someone else. So even though he is in someone else's house who may be lighting Chanukah candles, this visitor has to light his own Chanukah candles. Omar Rav Zera. Meresh ki havino bei rav. At first, when I was in the yeshiva, mishtatafno befriti bahavi ushpiza, I used to contribute to the host, and instead of lighting my own Chanukah candles, I offered payment to the host, and I was yotze. I fulfilled my Chanukah candles through my joining with him. It goes without saying that when he was in yeshiva, so he was being hosted by somebody where he was learning. Boser dinasivi itso, after I married a woman, amino, and then I figured, even though I still at times go out of my house, go away to learn, nevertheless, I figure, hashto vale lo tsarichno, I don't have to contribute toward Chanukah candles where I am being hosted. The komadliki olai bego beisoi, they are lighting for me in my house. In other words, my wife lights in my house, and I'm yotze my Chanukah requirement that way. As we go on in the Gemara, we see a new marking, the house shape. And on the side of our Gemara, we've noted Memros. We're noting this under our title heading, the Nosei and structural note, the Mivneh. The house form indicates Memros Shel Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Binyan Shmonim Hatoivim, Lener and Ledio. We're going to be speaking about oils that are beneficial or good for lighting candles and for the making of ink. The dashed underline that you see will be used here to emphasize the phrase v'shemen zayas min amuvchor. In both cases, when we're dealing with the oils for the ner, we circled the words lener and the word ledio. A few lines later, the choice oil for the lighting of candles and for the making of ink is olive oil, and that's what we try to emphasize with this dashed underline. And you'll see this used a number of times throughout this section of Gemara. We also highlighted the word mehader with a double underline. This word mehader means, in this case, to seek out. And you'll see that there are two stages of seekings out that are featured in the first section of the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's comments. Later in this section, we'll see diamonds surrounding the expression Yofin Lidyo in the context of Choymorim Shonim Yitziras Dyo. We're going to be different ingredients that are needed for the making of ink, and at each one of the stages, we will feature the different items that are good for the making of the ink. So we now turn to the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kol Hashmonim Kulam Yofin Lener. All oils are good for burning candles. V'shemen Zayas Min Hamuvchar. The choicest one is olive oil. it's beyond the context of our Daf Yomi Shir, but one has to take into consideration when he says all shmonim, all oils are good for the Nair, how does this contrast with the different kinds of oils that were debated or mentioned as not fit for Shabbos candle lighting? And one would consider that those oils are, let us not forget, they're subject to, there are machlokes tanoim on the topic. And also, when you're speaking about Shabbos, there is an additional consideration about types of oils that aren't drawn well by the wicks. So as far as a Shabbos consideration, there is more concern. But as far as, in general, weekday candle burning, so it still may be very well that all oils will provide light. As far as the effectiveness and the quality, that is questionable. But Rabbi Shimon Levi nonetheless is acknowledging that the Shemen Zayas is the choice one. Omar Abaye Meresh, at first, have a Mahader Mor. Mor is a reference to Rabbah, his teacher. So Rabbah used to seek out Mashcha de Shumshimi. He used to seek out Mashcha de Shumshimi. Shumshimi often is translated as sesame seed oil. Omar explaining, Hai Moshach Nahuri Tvei. The nature of this kind of oil is that it burns a long time. Kevon de Shoma Law Lahadu Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, then when he heard Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's comment, Mahader Amashu de Zesa, then he sought out olive oil. Omar explaining, Hai Tzolul Nahore Tvei. It has a clearer and brighter flame than other oils. The Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kol Hashmonim Yofin Lidyo. All oils are good for ink production, and olive oil is the best. Regarding the oil for inks, what is the stage at which the oil comes into the picture? Legabel o leashen. Legabel is to knead it, to mix it in, or for the purpose of creating the smoke. We'll take a look at Rashi, who gives us some of the practical details to explain these two actions. Rashi in the narrow lines around the fourth, fifth narrow line from the top, the Gabel Motzosi b'Tshuvas Hagoyim. Rashi says, "I found in the Tshuvas Hagoyim work Shema'ashnin Kli Zuchis Ba'oshan Shemen Zayis Ad Shemashchir." Someone would light some olive oil and have it burn, and the smoke rising from it would rise into a glass receptacle. So the glass, there would be a film of smoke that accumulates, that blackens the inside of this glass receptacle. And as the smoke accumulates, so it blackens. The gorer hashachuris, then he would scrape off that that smoke accumulation. The nosing, it would scrape it off, so it would be some type of a flaky or powdery substance. The nosein boi shemen kima, and then he would add to that a little bit of oil, umigabel bo, and then stir it, knead it, umiyabsho b'chamo, and would then dry it in the sun, umimache oiso l'soichadyo. And then that would be mixed into ink. So what we're asking about right now is the idea that olive oil is the choice. Is it for the stirring? In other words, after the smoke is produced, we mentioned here in Rashi that they would add a little oil. So is it the olive oil that's added at this point, or is the olive oil for the initial making of the smoke? Toshma, the Tani Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra, the Tanaic source that he provides will show us the answer. Kol Hashmonim Yofin Lidyo V'Shemen Zayas Min Amuvchar Bein Legabel Bein LaAshen. And here you see the answer to our question was whether it's for the mixing or for the smoke creation. Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra Masni Hochi. Rav Shmuel Bar Zutra has this version. Kol ho'ashonim yofin l'dyo. All different types of smokes are good for ink. V'shemen zayis min hamufchor. Omar Rav Huna, kol hasrofin yofin l'dyo. U'sraf kitaf yofe mikulan. As far as what sraf is, there is a machlokes Rashi and Tosfos on this point. Rashi, on the word sraf, he explains guma. And Tosfos says it's a type of fluid or dampness that's found in trees. So we'll leave it at that for now. All that the Gemara concludes is that sraf ketaf, the ketaf is the name of a tree, the sraf from the ketaf is the best. The Gemara continues, and before we continue, we look at the side of the Gemara. We have our topic heading, Habrochos al Ner Hanukkah. We'll talk about the brochos that one makes over the Ner Hanukkah, Hamadlik, Horoeh, the one who lights Hanukkah candles, and one who isn't lighting Hanukkah candles, but sees Hanukkah candles. The Chiluk Ben Yom Rishon L'Shar Yomim, and we'll notice a difference between the first day and the rest of the days. And the Mivneh, we have a structural note which features triangles that are used to Havlotas Yoim Rishon and Umikan Ve'elech, where we want to emphasize in our markings the first day, what happens, and the subsequent days. So now in the Gemara, Omar Reb Chiya Bar Ashi, Omar Rav, Hamadlik Ner Chanukah Tzorech Levorech, one who lights Chanukah candles must make brachas. Reb Yirmi Omar Horoya Ner Chanukah Tzorech Levorech, one who sees Chanukah candles but himself is not going to be lighting them, so he also has to make brachas. Omar Rav Yehuda, Yoim Rishon, Horoya Mevorech Shnayim, Umadlik Mevorech Shosh. On the first day, one who sees Chanukah candles, so he'll make two brachas, and one who actually lights them will make three. Mikan Ve'elech, beyond that, Madlik Mevorech Shnayim, Veroya Mevorech Achas. My Memayit, which bracha do we eliminate? In other words, we said on the first day, the one who lights candles makes three brachas. On the subsequent days, he makes two. So which bracha is reduced, is eliminated? Answer, Memayit Zman. The bracha that is better known as Shehchiyonu is the one that is made only on the first day and is not recited on the subsequent days. The Gemara asks, V'nimut Neis. Neis is a reference to the bracha of She'oso Nisim Lavosenu. Why not have that bracha eliminated? The Gemara answers, Neis kol yomi isei. Every day there was a miracle. Every one of the days, of the 8 days of Hanukkah, there was a miracle. But as far as Zman, the Zman text says, She'chiyonu, Vikimonu vigionu lazman hazeh. Vigionu means, and we arrived at this time. Well, once the first day arrives, you've arrived at the time of Hanukkah. So the bracha would be inappropriate to be said on the second day after having said it on the first day, because you've already acknowledged on the first day the arriving at Hanukkah. Continuing in the Gemara, my Mevorech, what's the text of the bracha? Of the bracha for lighting the candles? Mevorech, asher kitshanu v'mitzvotzav v'tzivanu lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. The Gemara here is not asking about the other brachos, but is asking specifically about the bracha of that's specific to the Chanukah candle lighting, and here it gave us the text. V'heichon tzivanu, in the text we say that he sanctified us and commanded us, Sivonu, he commanded us to light Hanukkah candles. Now, where did the Almighty command us in lighting Hanukkah candles? After all, Hanukkah is a rabbinic holiday, and when you say he, the Almighty, commanded us, there's no reference in the Torah, there's no open reference in the Torah to celebrate the holiday of Hanukkah. So where is this command? We have a couple of approaches to this. Number one, Rav Avi Omar, Milo Sosur. The pasuk says, "Lo susur min hadavar asher agidu lecha," that one should not veer off of anything that they, the rabbis, teach you. So the Torah does command us to listen to the rabbis. So it's in that context that we can say that the Almighty commanded us to light Hanukkah candles through the fact that the rabbis instituted this holiday. Number two, Rav Nechemya Omar, Sh'al Avicha V'Agedcha Zekeinecha V'Yomru Loch. This pasuk, as far as Rav Nechemya is concerned, serves as the basis, where it says in this pasuk that Zekeinecha V'Yomru Loch, the sages, and they will tell you what to do. Mosiv Rav Amram. Rav Amram raises a question. This question lasts a couple of lines. We've noted this with our long question marking to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see the kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. Takes a few lines to develop the question. Hadmai. Dmai is produce that one bought from an ignoramus, an amaoretz. And there is a certain level of suspicion that they don't tithe their produce properly. Hence, there's a rabbinic institution that if you buy from an amoretz, you, the purchaser, must tithe the produce. Now, this is a rabbinic ruling, and we must emphasize that. Regarding the use of demai produce, so there are a number of halachas that are mentioned. Ma'arvinvo, l'shtatvinvo, means it can be used in making an eruv. It can be used in making a sheet of muvos. These are halachas that regard joining, making properties that are held by several people into a single unit of ownership. We're not going to dwell on these points right now, though. Umivorchin alav, if one eats bread made of demai produce, so you make a broch of hamotzi over it. Umizamnin alav, and you would make a zimun, three people joining together for birchas hamazon. Umafrishin oisoi orum ubein hashmoshes, and one can tithe it even if they're unclothed, and also bein hashmoshes. This is a reference to a tithing as Shabbos enters, even though on Shabbos itself you're not allowed to tithe things at the bein hashmoshes period, which is a sofek yom, sofek laila. It's a doubt whether it's still part of Friday or is Shabbos itself. You're allowed to tithe the demai tithe. We continue. Vi amris, if you say kol midrabbonan boi brocha, that those requirements that are rabbinic in origin require the recitation of a bracha, as we indicated with the Ner Chanukah, then in this case with the demai, which is also a rabbinic requirement to tithe, and we know that in the informal tithing, in Torah-based tithing, there is a bracha that you make. But here we're going further and saying that even rabbinic requirements generate the need for a bracha. Hacha ki koi orum hechi mevorech. In this source, we saw that one can tithe when he's unclothed. Well, if in the process of tithing you're going to make a bracha, so you're going to end up having a person who's stark naked making a bracha. And how can that be? The Torah says that your camp must be holy, which is a reference to proper behavior of modesty that's required for, we'll say, for religious observance. So how can you be in a state of orum, of unclothed, and making a bracha? Omar Abaye. Abaye explains that, in fact, in the tithing of the demai, you won't be making a bracha, but that does not contradict our statement before that Neros Chanukah require bracha, even though they are rabbinic. And the distinction is as follows. Vadai de divrayim boi bracha. Something that is a vadai, that's a certain need. There is a certain need that is of rabbinic origin, so that generates a bracha. Sofek de divrayim, something like demai, which is a doubt. Maybe the fellow from whom you bought it, the amoras from whom you bought it, did actually tithe it. So a sofek de divrayim, lo boi bracha. That does not generate the need for a tithe. Something that's a matter of doubt, that was instituted by the rabbis. In other words, the rabbis instituted out of from a sense of doubt the need to tithe the demai produce. That, though, does not generate the need for a bracha. Question. When outside of the land of Israel, 2 days of Yom Tov are celebrated. The second day is what we call Sveika Diyoma. In other words, since people outside of Israel don't know for sure, before the calendar was instituted, don't know for sure whether the first day is the actual first day, or maybe the second day of Yom Tov is the first day. So that's a case of Sufek, and yet we make brachos for example, Kiddush on the second day of Yom Tov. So the Gemara answers, Hasam ki hechi delo lizu zuli ba. There, the need, in the case of Yom Tov Sheni, there's a separate or an additional consideration that we impose the need for making brachos, for example, Kiddush and Shmona Esrei, that we do for Yom Tov Sheni, so as to preserve the seriousness, and people should not take it lightly. In other words, if people on Yom Tov Sheni did not make Kiddush and didn't say Shmon Esrei, the Yom Tov Shmon Esrei, people would say, oh, it's not really important, it's not really a holiday, and they would come to treat it lightly and, of course, violate Yom Tov rules. Rava Omar. Rava says, as far as the Demai issue is concerned, there isn't even a suffix, so to speak. He said, because Rov Ame Haaretz Ma'asrin Hain, the majority of Ame Haaretz, of the ignorant ones, do proper tithing. Let's take a look at the Rashi, Rava Omar, Sufek, we have a little star to help you find it more easily. He says, Sufek de Devrayim Boi Brocha, even something that's a Sufek, Midurabbanan, requires a bracha, like is the case of Yom Tov Sheni. So, if that's the case, why by demai is there no bracha? Udemai afilu sufik lo have. Demai is not classified as a doubt. A doubt would be when you have something that's 50-50. By demai, you don't have 50-50. Elochumra bi alma. It's a mere rabbinic stringency that's imposed. The rov amiorets masrin, the majority of Ame Haaretz do proper tithing, and Rove, when you have a majority, that establishes it as if that is it, so that there is really no need for tithing other than a rabbinic chumrah, stringency. That being said, it puts Demai on a lower level of importance as far as bracha recitation is concerned. We continue with a new topic. On the side, we have a nosei, a topic heading, and it reads as follows. Chotzer sheyesh bo shnei psochim. A courtyard that has two entrances. According to Rashi, this sugya really is a reference to a house in a courtyard, and the house has two entrances. Eifo menichim neiros Hanukkah. Where are the Hanukkah candles supposed to be placed? Working with the idea that Hanukkah candles are placed at the doorway, here you have a house that has two doorways. Now, we'll be discussing under the issue of two doorways, Shnei Psocheha, you have case Meruach Echad, where on the two doorways are on the same side of the building, of the house, and you have Mishnei Ruchos, where one door is on the northern side and the other door is on the eastern side, two different directions, and therefore, what is the halacha regarding the placing of the Neros Hanukkah? So now, the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna, Chotzer Shiesh Lo Shnei Psochim, a courtyard that has, and using Rashi's Pshat, it's a courtyard that has a house in it with two entranceways. Tzricho Shtei Neros. That means you have to have two Hanukkah menorahs, two Hanukkah candles, literally, for such a house. Omar Rava. Rava comments on this and says, Lo amoron elo mishtei ruchos. The need for having two separate Hanukkah candles is when the two entranceways are on two different sides of the house, one on the eastern side and one on the northern side. Avo meruach achas lo tzorach. But if the two doorways are on the same side of the house, no need for a double Hanukkah menorah. My Taima. Now, before we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading. We noted that this is a Hemshech, a continuation, with a Mivneh, a structural note. The double underline that you see here are Shlavim, the Bi'ur, my Taima. Chotzer Shiesh Lo Shnei Psochim Shnei Ruchos Boy Shnei Neros Masha Enkein. You know, if it has two Psochim Shnei Ruchos and has two doorways from two sides, then there is a need for two separate Hanukkah menorahs. And Masha Enkein Im Shnei Psochim Ruch Echad. Why this distinction? So the marking that you see are to emphasize Shlavim, the stages in analysis. So Im Lema Mishum Chashoda, if it's because people might think that you didn't light. In other words, if you've got only one entranceway with a Hanukkah menorah, so it will arouse suspicion on the part of the public regarding your having lit. Well, just by way of structure, this is what we call the first stage. There's Ilemo Mishum Chashoda. Later, we have another double underline where the Gemara says, Li oilom mishum chashoda, and the Gemara will say, yes, there is a consideration of being suspect of not having lit. However, until we get to that second stage, we have to analyze, first, when you say being under suspicion of not having lit, in whose eyes are we talking? And that's what the Gemara does now. Chashoda deman, who's going to suspect? If it's a question of what people from outside town will think, well, even if the two entranceways are on the same side of the house, both entranceways should have candles, because people from outside town might think that this house, this building, has been divided into two separate apartments. And each apartment owner needs to light his own Hanukkah candles. So if the concern is chashad, generated by people outside the community, why the distinction, even two entranceways on one side of the house, should require each entrance its own Hanukkah menorah? E chashod de b'nei maso, if it's a question of the chashad, the doubt, that will arise in the minds of people of the local community, afilu mishnei ruchos nami loliboy, even if the two entranceways are on two different sides of the house, we're talking about local folks, and everyone knows that it's a single ownership house that just happens to have two entranceways. Why the need for two separate Hanukkah candles? The Gemara answers, li oilom mishum chashoda de b'nei masa. We are concerned with the chashad of the local folks. And again, when we say local folks, we're talking about people that know the house has not been divided into two separate apartments. However, v'zimnin d'mechlifi b'hai v'lo chalfi b'hai. There are people that travel on a particular route every day, and they go by only, let's say, the eastern side of the house. They don't walk along the perpendicular street that runs north-south. So they don't see the northern side of the house. I should say, technically speaking, the street there is running east-west, and hence it runs along the northern side of the house. People have their fixed routes. So the Amri, and people will say, let's say of local folks that don't walk on both streets. They have their route, and they happen to pass by on the street that faces the doorway that does not have the Hanukkah licht. If we don't insist on both entranceways having it, so you'll have those people passing on the road, on the street, that faces the door that does not have. So people will say, Ki hechi de b'hai pischo lo adlik, just like at this entranceway he didn't light, b'hach pischo nami lo adlik, the other entranceway that he owns, he also didn't light. So in order to prevent that chashad, again, we're taking in consideration the chashad of the local folks, we want to have both entranceways with Hanukkah menorahs to protect the owner from being under suspicion. And as we explained, the suspicion would be generated by those people that don't travel on both streets. From where do we know that we are to take into consideration what people will think? In other words, that it's important that halacha preempts people, the arousing of suspicion of the public. So the basis for this comes from the halacha of pe'ah. Pe'ah is the requirement of leaving literally a corner of the field. It's leaving a part of one's field at the end of the harvest unharvested, so that the poor, pe'ah is a tithe to the poor, so that the poor will come and take from that which you left unharvested. And the halacha is that you leave pe'ah, you leave that unharvested stuff at the end of the harvest period. And then, will the poor come to take that unharvested produce. Omar Rebbe Shimon, Bishvil Arba Dvorim, Omra Torah, Loniach Pe'ah, Besof Sadeo. Because of four things, the Rabbanan said, leave Pe'ah, Besof Sadeo. Sof means literally the end of the field. However, we learn Rashi, Besof Sadeo, Bigmar Kitsiro. At the end of the harvesting, kidichtiv lo sechale, mashma bishas kilui, v'lo shiyakze oisa kodem lochein, that a person should designate the part of his field that's for payah, that's for the payah tithe, at the end of the harvest period. And we're emphasizing time right now. So why is it that the payah is designated at the end of the harvest period? The source lists off 4 points and then explains them. Number one, mitnei gezel aniyim. Two, mitnei bitol aniyim. Three, mitnei hachashad. And number four, umishum bal techale. What we have to emphasize in our study right now is the third consideration, mitnei hachashad. But as we said, this each point will be explained. Mitnei gezel. We want to have it left at the end of the harvest period so as to prevent a situation where the poor, where some of the poor will be ripped off, will be treated poorly, we'll say mistreated. What could otherwise happen? Shelo yireh bala bayis sho penuya. Imagine that the halacha doesn't require the tithe to be left at the end of the harvest period. Let's say a person could do it at his own whim. You could have a case then that a person would find, shopnu means literally an empty time, meaning it's a time where there are no poor people around, and he'll say to his relative that happens to be of limited means, a poor relative of his, the yomer lekroivoi oni. And they'll say to his relative who's poor, says, hey, you know, there's no one around. Come right now and take the pe'ah. Take this section of the field that I'm designating for pe'ah. Take it for yourself. So we don't want a situation like that where if the pe'ah tithing is left to the individual's whim, so he'll see a time when there are no aniyim around, and he'll say to his Krovo, his relative who's an Oni, Hareze Pe'ah, here, this is Pe'ah. And thereby depriving other Aniyim from an equal opportunity, equal chance of getting this man's Pe'ah tithe. So what does the Halacha say? You can't leave it, the Pe'ah, just whenever you want. You leave it at the end of the harvest. At the end of the harvest, that's a time that's obvious to all the Aniyim, and they see this man is finished harvesting his field, they'll know now is the time to go seek out the pe'ah, which was not left, as we just said, which he could not have left or tithed earlier. Continuing at the top of Omid Beis, Omidnei Bitol Aniyim, the idea of having a fixed time for the pe'ah tithing, namely at the end of the harvest, Shelo Yu Aniyim Yoshin Umeshamrin Achshav Meniach Balabayas Pe'ah, so as to free up the aniyim from keeping them seated there waiting and waiting, waiting. Oh, now he's going to set a tithe to pay off. If it was up to the individual's whim, so the poor wouldn't know when he's going to designate a section of his field as the payout tithe. So he'll be waiting all the time. This way, the aniyim aren't waiting. Bittul aniyim literally means they've been rendered unable to engage in their own activities because they're waiting here for when he's going to tithe. This way, they're not going to be sitting in wait. They'll know that at the end of the harvest period, which is pretty much a well-known time, that's when the payah is going to be left, and they won't. And they'll be freed up to do whatever else they need to do. Umipnei chashad, as we said, this is really it's what's important for us. We want the payah tithe left at the end of the season, at the end of the harvest period. Shaloyu oivrim v'shalvim omrim, so as to prevent passersby from saying. Imagine a case where he actually did leave the payah, but he tithed it before the end of the harvest. So at that point, the aniyim would have come and taken their payah tithe. And then the owner would continue harvesting the field, leaving nothing at the end of the harvest, because as far as his payah is concerned, he already took care of that. But passersby aren't going to know that. They're going to see a field that's completely harvested, and they're going to say, Tavo me'eiro la'odam sholiniach payah b'sadeu. Let a curse befall the person who didn't leave payah in his field. And one of the Meforshim, the Chochmas Manoach, says that what would then happen is that here people are cursing a person who actually did leave the payah, but just they didn't know about it. So they're cursing someone for naught. And there's an avera of called Lo Sikalo Cheresh, that they would be in violation of that prohibition of cursing. So in order to prevent the public from being nichshal on this, and this is what we call chashad, that they will suspect him of not having left the payah if he were able to leave it earlier. And the fourth point was umishum bal sechala. Bal sechala is from the pasuk lo sechala pasodcha. Bal means do not, techala, finish off. The Gemara asks, how is it that this brisa is considering the bal techala a fourth reason? Aren't all the three considerations we had up till this point all explanations of why one should not techaleh, which Rashi explained earlier was mashma that at the end of the harvest season we're teaching leave the payah. So the pasuk of lo sechal pasodcha, and as Rashi said before, that the loshen lo sechaleh is a mashma bishas kilui, at the timing, at the end of the harvest, leave the payah. So how is it that this source counts mishum b'atchala as a fourth reason when, in effect, we were explaining the first three points of this brayso, we're explaining what is behind b'atchala. So Omar Ravo mipnei horamoyin, the mentioning of mishum b'atchala as a separate consideration is in fact to prevent the trickers, the ramoyim, the underhanded people. That meaning what? The people that would actually not leave any payah, and if there wasn't a standard time for leaving payah, they would then say, they would, these people who would have taken the whole harvest for themselves and say, oh well, we left the payah earlier. So we preempt that underhandedness by saying you can't leave the payah early. You have to leave it at the end of the harvest season. Thereby, as we say, preempting the underhanded from saying that we left it earlier. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Rav Yitzchok Bar Radifam Rav Huna. We should note that we have a topic heading for this under our no say heading. and we call it ribui pios bener. The word ner is a receptacle that holds oil and wicks. Rav Yitzchok describes an oil receptacle that has two spouts to it, and from each spout there would be a wick that emerges. And he says that a ner sheyesh lo shnei pios oile lishnei bnei adam, working of course with the rule that the basic Hanukkah candle requirement is one candle per household. So if you have a ner that has two spouts to it, so two people could be yotze with this, even though it's one vessel. But the one vessel has two separate spouts. It counts for two people. Omar Rava, Mila Ka'oro Shemen, V'kifa Psilos. The person filled a bowl with oil, and around the rim of the bowl, he positioned wicks. Kofa Oleho Kli Oilu L'kamo B'nei Odo. If he covered the vessel, so that you have wicks protruding from a vessel containing oil, but there's a cover on it, that arrangement can actually enable numerous people to fulfill each one their own Hanukkah candle requirement. Lo kofo leo kli, if you didn't cover this vessel that has wicks around its rim, if you didn't cover it with a vessel, with a cover, what happens when you have a vessel with wicks around its perimeter and no cover to it, the flame eventually rises and merges into one singular flame. That is called a medura, literally a fireplace or a bonfire, but it's the idea of many flames merging into one. And as far as that's concerned, it won't count as a Hanukkah candle even for one person. Because a Hanukkah candle is a wick coming from a single flame coming from a single wick, and not the merging of flames together in a torch form. As we continue in the Gemara, we have another topic heading. We have numbers that we present here in little diamonds 1 through 3. And on the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, we note, Oni She'ein Lo Emtzaim, a poor man who has little means. Gimel Mikrim, three cases, Shetzorch Livchor Ma'aliknos, three cases that he'll have to choose what to purchase. It's either this or that. He doesn't have enough money for both of these. And with our markings, you can see we underline the first two cases, Ner Beis or Ner Hanukkah. It's a question of Shabbos candles versus Hanukkah candles. The second case, you'll see Shabbos candles versus buying wine for Kiddush. And the third, we didn't underline, because the third really is a question as opposed to the first two, which are statements. What about a choice made? One would have to make Ner Hanukkah and Kiddush. In other words, it's Shabbos Hanukkah, and he has enough money for one or the other. He has for Ner Hanukkah or for wine. So now we turn to the Gemara. Omar Rava, Pshita Li, the following two cases are obvious to Rava. Ner Beso v'Ner Hanukkah, Ner Beso Odif. Mishum Sholom Beso. If one has to make a choice between Shabbos candles or Hanukkah candles, so he must choose Shabbos candles because of a consideration called Shalom Beso. Let's take a look at the Rashi, Shalom Beso. V'ochyamrim l'kamon, the Gemara says on Chof Heim Beis, v'tiznach mishol nafshi zu hadlokas ner Shabbos. This pasuk mentions peace, and peace is associated with ner Shabbos. Why? Shebnei Beso mitstarim leishev b'choshech. The members of a person's house will feel a feeling of disturbance or pain sitting in the darkness. So, as to solve the problem of sitting in darkness, people light Shabbos candles. So Shabbos candles are to promote Shalom Beiso. And that's a stronger consideration than Ner Hanukkah. Continuing in the Gemara, Ner Beiso v'Kiddush Hayom. One has to make a choice between Shabbos candles or wine for Kiddush. Ner Beiso Olef, Mishum Shalom Beiso. Once again, the same choice must be made. The Shabbos candles, because of the Shalom Beiso consideration. So we see that Ner Shabbos beats out Ner Hanukkah and Kiddush. What about the two losers, so to speak, pitted one against the other? Boy Rava, Ner Hanukkah, the Kiddush Hayom. What they have in common is both of them lost out to the Ner Shabbos. But let's say a person has to make a choice between Ner Hanukkah and Kiddush Hayom Mahu. What is the din? And now there are two sides of this question. And we call this Aleph Oidoma Beis. Kiddush Hayom Odif Nitodir. Maybe precedence should be placed on the wine for Kiddush because of its regularity. Todir, it's more regular. It's once every single week. Oy Dilma Ner Hanukkah Odif Mishum Pusumei Nisa. Or maybe purchasing Ner Hanukkah is a more important consideration because it is the means of publicizing the miracle, and that consideration called Pirsum Hanes is an important thing to accomplish. So this was the question. Bosu de Baya Hoder Pasha, after the question was raised, he then answered it. Ner Hanukkah Odef Mishum Pirsumei Nisa. That the Pirsum Hanes aspect is, if you have to make a choice between one or the other, that is the way to go, to choose Pirsum Hanes over that which happens to occur on a more regular basis. Omar Rav Huna. Now we have a section of Gemara that is featured in our topic heading on the side, the Nosei Mivneh. You'll see a double underline is featured. B'ma Zocheh, what will one merit? Harogil be, we'll see, one who's a regular with regard to Neros. And Hazoyer be, one who was careful with regard to an hour ago, we'll see Mezuzah, careful with Tzitzis, careful with Kiddush Hayom. So we turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna, Harogil b'ner, Havyon le bonim tamidi chachamim. The next comment is Hazoyer b'mezuzah zoicha ledira noe. The Marsha explains the difference in language between Harogil and Hazoyer. Marsha says that Harogil literally means one who is regular at, but it has to do with one who is margilas ishta, who motivates his wife to take care of the candle lighting. Now, the question here is what candles are referred to. So Rashi says, Ner over here is a reference to Ner Shabbos and Neros Hanukkah. The Rabbeinu Hananel says that the Ner referred to here is Neros Hanukkah. Whatever the case be, especially if you take the Neros Shabbos approach, Harogil means he would be someone that motivates his wife to light the candles, because that the lighting of the candles is chiefly, we'll say, an obligation upon the woman. She is, if there is a woman around, she is the one that should be lighting the candles. The next comment in the Gemara was Hazoyer the mezuzah, someone who is himself. Now, the word zohir applies to when we're talking about the person himself has the obligation. Here, the man has his own; he's obligated to make sure that the mezuzah, that there's a mezuzah. So, one who is zohir, one who is careful with the fulfillment of mitzvah mezuzah, zohir ledira. Now, we mentioned man, but that's assuming we're talking about a family setup. If we're dealing with a woman who is alone and she lives in a place, so she has to take care of the mezuzah. This isn't a gender-based mitzvah. So one who is careful with mitzvah's mezuzah will merit having a nice domicile. Hazoyer b'tzitzis, one who is careful with the fulfillment of mitzvah tzitzis, zeche letalis noah, he'll merit having fine clothing. Hazoyer b'kiddush hayom, zeche memali gar v'yayin, one who is careful with the Kiddush, he will merit having many receptacles of wine. An indication of he'll merit having wealth, most likely. We have a new marking, this diamond with the colored in tip, is explained under our topic, under our note on the side, Shnei Maisim Shero'u Anoshim Regilim Veneros V'yotsu Mehem Talmidei Chochamim. We'll have two stories involving people that were careful with Neros, and they merited having scholars coming forth from their house. In other words, like we said a few lines above, that one who is Rogi Bener, he'll have children that are Talmidei Chochamim. Here are stories to illustrate that. Rav Huna have Rogil Dave Cholef V'toni Apischa de Rebbe Ovin Nagra. Rav Huna often passed by the home of Rabbi Ovin, the woodsman. Nagra is a chorosh etzim. He chops wood. Chosadav a rogil b'shrogi tuva. Rav Huna noticed that in Rabbi Ovin's house there was a customary large amount of candles. Omar. So Rav Huna said, Trei Gavri Ravri Nafki Mihocha, two great men are going to emerge from this home. Nafki Minayo Rav Idi Bar Ovin, Rav Chia Bar Ovin. These are two great Amoraic figures, Rav Idi and Rav Chia, both of them the children of Ovin. And he merited that because of what we said, he was careful with Neros, or he was diligent with Neros. And we might as well say, he and his wife. Rav Chisto have a rugged avicholef v'toni apischa de beinosha de Rav Shizvi. Rav Chisto regularly passed by. Cholef v'toni, the word v'toni means a second time. It means he would go back and forth, passing often by the house of Rav Shizvi. More accurately, the beinosha de Rav Shizvi. There are a couple of pshatim on what beinosha means, but for simple purposes right now, means the father of Rav Shizvi. He used to walk by Rav Shizvi's father's home. We saw that Rav Shizvi's father lit many candles on a regular basis. Omar, and of course we're talking about Shabbos candles. He lit a lot of Shabbos candles. Omar, Gavro Rabo Nofik Mehocha, a great man is going to emerge from this house. And sure enough, Nofak Minayu, Rav Shizvi came forth from them. Divisu de Rav Yosef. Now, before we go on in the Gemara, the topic heading we assign to this section is Zman Hadlokas Neros Shabbos, the proper time for lighting Shabbos candles. So the Gemara says, Divisu means the wife of Rav Yosef Havas Ma'achro Umaglikis Lo. She used to light the Shabbos candles very close to darkness, very close to the onset of Shabbos. Omar lo Rav Yosef, so her husband said, Tanya, we have a Tanaic source from which we will see that there's no need to delay in the Shabbos candle lighting right up till darkness. The source features the pasuk lo yomish amud he'anon yoimam v'amud ho'esh laila, that as the Jews were traveling in the desert, there was a constant presence of the cloud, the pillar of clouds, and the pillar of fire. Malameh, this pasuk teaches us, now we know, just by way of background, that the pillar of cloud was present primarily in the daytime, and the pillar of fire was present primarily at night. However, you'll see here there was overlap. Malamed she'amud onon mashlim la'amud ho'esh. That means that the amud onon would appear while the amud esh was still around, which would be at the end of the night. The amud ho'esh mashlim la'amud ha'onon, and the fire would, the pillar of fire would appear at the end, toward the end of the day, when the amud ha'onon was still out. What Yosef was trying to say is that she should have lit the candles a bit earlier. In other words, the candles, let's say, correspond to the amud esh, the pillar of fire, and the daytime is represented by the amud ha'onon. While the amud ha'onon was still around, the amud ha'esh already appeared, so that you can light the Shabbos candles earlier and not wait till the very end of the day. Well, upon hearing this, Savra Lagduma, she figured, well, I'll light the mic really early then. Amar lo, ahu Saba. So, there was an old man or a sage that told her, Tanina, uvad shelo yakdim v'shelo yachad. There is a Tanaic source that says that one lights Shabbos candles, but not too early and not too late. So that by doing it so much too much earlier would be also incorrect. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a series of double underlines, and under our topic structural note on the side, we've written Gimel Tsuros shel hityachasut yafeh l'rabbanon v'hatotzaot. You have three examples of one's relationship to rabbinic figures in positive types of attitudes or relations to the Rabbanon, and what are the results. So Omar Rava, the Rochim Rabbanon, one who loves rabbis, Havulei Bonim Rabbanim, he'll merit having sons that are themselves rabbinic. Demokir Rabbanan, one who honors Rabbanan, Havulei Chas Nivosa Rabbanan, he'll merit having sons-in-law that are scholars. The Dochil Mirabbanan, one who has fear and awe of the rabbis, Hu Gufei Havitsum Rabbanan, he himself will merit being a Torah scholar. Lo bar hochihu, and as Rashi explains, if you're talking about someone that doesn't spend much time learning Torah, even though, so therefore, to expect him to become a sage would be inconceivable. Nevertheless, if he is a person that doesn't learn much Torah but does have a sense of fear and awe of rabbis, have a mishtamon milei ketsubim rabbanan, his words will be hearkened unto like the words of a Torah scholar. In other words, he'll merit being listened to by others. The Mishnah mentioned velo b'shemen sreifa, that one is not to light using shemen sreifa. My shemen sreifa, what is that? Omar Rabba, shemen shel truma shenit me'a. Truma is a tithe that one gives to Kohanim from his different produce, including olive oil. We have a case here of shemen, olive oil, that was designated as truma, and it became tomei. That's called shemen sreifa. V'amai koru lo shemen sreifa. Why is shemen shenit meis, shemen that became tomei, called shemen sreifa, literally oil of burning? Answer, hoyu ulisreifa oime, since it is destined to be burnt. That's how you deal with shemen of truma that became tomei. First of all, it's forbidden to eat it. What do you do with it? You burn it. So in honor of what you do with it, it got this name, shemen sreifa. Now, we were taught that you don't use shemen sreifa for Shabbos candles. At least that's what it would sound like. Uba Shabbos my time alo. So why not use shemen sreifa for Shabbos candles? After all, we are talking about olive oil. So as far as its ability to burn, that's not an issue. It burns very nicely. So there's no shema yata issue, you would think. However, we didn't say the last word. So the Gemara answers, Mishum shemitzvah vavaro, since there is a mitzvah to burn this oil, this shemen of truma tamea, gezero shemayate. In fact, there is a shemayate, but not in order to produce a nice light, in order to benefit from the light, but in order to hasten the burning, in order to make sure the burning takes place, so one will tilt it and increase the rate of burning, because it's a mitzvah to get rid of it. So there is a gzeira shemayate, but not for the same type of shemayate. He's tilting it not for the same ends in mind, but it nevertheless is the same means for achieving different ends, namely the fear that he might tilt it in order for it to burn faster. Omar le Abaye. Abaye addresses Rabbah and says, Elo me'ato. B'yom Tov Lishteri, when it comes to Shemen Srefa on Yom Tov, when there's no Isser in Shema Yateh, burning, use the use of fire on Yom Tov is something that's allowed. So you can't say that there's a fear of him coming to tilt it when it comes to Yom Tov. So on Yom Tov it should be mutter to burn the Shemen Srefa, Lishteru. Aloma Tana, so why has it been taught Ein Madlikin B'Shemen Srefa B'Yom Tov? Why is there a prohibition? Answer, Gezeira Yom Tov Otu Shabbos. We don't want you lighting it on Yom Tov. Granted, there's no Shema Yata fear on Yom Tov per se, but if you light it on Yom Tov, you will come to light it on Shabbos, and we don't want that. It's interesting to note that don't light it on Yom Tov because you might come to light it on Shabbos, but even if you lit it for Shabbos candles, that too itself is a gzera of Shema Yata. So on the surface of things, it would look like we have a gzera l'gzera. Nevertheless, Abaye is, we'll say it's a Rabbah, is willing to accept that phenomenon of a gzera l'gzera. What we're talking about right now happens to be the subject of discussion found in the Tosfos, Dibur Masel Gzera, that one can refer to later on. So far, we have been dealing with Rabbah's explanation as to why one does not light with Shemen Srefa. Rav Chista Omar, L'shemo yate loy chashinon. The issue of his tilting it is not something that we are worried about. In other words, we're not worried about him wanting to hasten the burning in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Elohocha, our Mishnah, which says don't use Shemen Srefa, is talking about a very specific case. It's B'yom Tov Shechal Yois Erev Shabbos Askinan. We're talking about an Erev Shabbos, not just any Shabbos, not just any Erev Shabbos. It's a Friday that also happens to be a holiday, a Yom Tov. So what's the problem with lighting Shabbos candles using Shemen Srefa on a Yom Tov? Because there's a separate Isur, a separate prohibition of burning holy items on Yom Tov. And in our case, that he's going to be lighting the Shabbos candles while it's still day. So he's lighting the Shabbos candles on Friday, obviously. But that Friday happens to be a Yom Tov. So he's in effect, being Soreif Kachim on Yom Tov. Question. The Seifa says, the latter part of the Mishnah says, one is not allowed to burn the Shemen Sreifa on Yom Tov. So Yom Tov is already discussed at the end of the Mishnah, the latter part of the Mishnah. Michlal de Reisha, lav b'Yom Tov askinan. Must be that the earlier part of the Mishnah, where it said v'lo b'Shemen Sreifa, is not talking about Yom Tov. It's talking about a standard Friday. Omar Rav Chanina Misura, you got it wrong, he says. Ma'atam koma. The structure of the Mishnah is called the Ma'atam structure, as the Gemara explains. We put this in a frame to represent the way the Mishnah is supposed to look. Ma'atam ein madligin b'shemen sreifa b'yom tov. Why is it that one does not light Shemen Srefa on Yom Tov, which we're talking about Yom Tov right before Shabbos? L'fi she'ein sorfin kachim b'Yom Tov, because, not because of Shabbos, but because of Yom Tov itself. And the issur is, we don't burn kachim on Yom Tov. Tanya, we continue at the top of Chof Dalet Omed Aleph. Tanya kavosei de Rav Chista, we have a Tanaic source supporting Rav Chista. Kol elu she'omru ein madlikin bohen b'Shabbos, Madlikin Bohem B'Yom Tov. All those substances, materials, fuels that we said you don't light with on Shabbos, you can light with them on Yom Tov. Chutz Mishemen Srefa, with the exception of Shemen Srefa, that you're not going to light on Yom Tov. L'fi She'ein Sorfin Kodshim B'Yom Tov. Because we don't eliminate, we don't destroy or burn kachim on Yom Tov. Yom Tov is not the day for being sorev kachim. In this case, the sorev, the burning of truma tamea. So you see in this source, the reason given for not burning Shemen Srefa on Yom Tov isn't a function of Gzeira Yom Tov Atu Shabbos, but rather Yom Tov intrinsically or inherently is the problem. And the problem being Ein Sorfin Kochim Bi Yom Tov. This concludes today's Gemara section of Gemara Markings Daf Yomi. For those who are interested, our site offers a shiur on today's Daf Yomi, Tosfos presenting the Tosfos text with explanation.